Welcome to the Game Changer Society with Lane Kennedy-Levy. Talking with game changers from around the world.
Hey, Game Changer. You want to hang out with other Game Changers? Have all of the answers to all of your questions? Well, you can. Over at thegamechangersociety.com. Make sure to get your invitation. You don't want to miss it. Okay, let's get into the show now. All right, let's get into the show today. How is everyone? I hope you're having a great moment. My name's Lane Kennedy-Levy. I'm the host of the show, and this is the Game Changer Society. I talk to amazing people doing amazing things all over the world. I love that. I love that. I meet fascinating people, and I bring them to you so you can hear what they're doing and perhaps be inspired by them in some, you know, tiny way or something. I don't know, just something. Today, I get the honor and privilege of speaking with Derek Sivers of Sivers.org. Funny little story is that I went to WDS. You all know that I went to WDS. And I had no idea who was speaking up there. And when he came out on stage, I was like, duh. And he didn't know me. But, you know, many, many, many years ago, I was with somebody who was one of his first people that he kind of had done business with. It was super cool. And they went to school together. And long story short, now I get to talk to him and you guys get to listen. And I'm so glad to have you on the show today. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lane. It's about time. I think it's been a long time coming. So it's nice to finally be talking with you.
Yeah. So I just want to say I loved what you talked about at WDS. It was just really refreshing, and I was so glad to see you up on the stage. So I just wanted to say that first.
That was one of my favorite conferences of all time. It was amazing. It was an amazing audience. It was great.
Yeah. It's a good group of people. I like doing that. So you're going to be, you know, we're going to talk about you and your story and what qualifies you to be a game changer. I know that you think differently, and I just know it. But I want you to kind of, you know, tell the listeners today a little bit about your story and what qualifies you as being a game changer.
Sure. My background, mostly a musician. Mm-hmm. Ever since I was 14, I wanted to be a famous, successful musician. And so that was my singular focus in the world from the age of 14 until 29. And for the most part, I did it. I mean, I didn't get super famous, but I actually made a living just making music. I was a full-time musician and even bought a house in Woodstock with the money I made touring and gigging and producing people's records and whatnot. Mm. And then in 1998, I was just selling my CD on my band's website. Mm-hmm. But at the time, there was nowhere for an independent musician like me to sell my CD. There was literally not a single business anywhere in the world that would sell your music if you weren't signed to a record label.
Yeah.
So I just built my own little buy now button, shopping cart thing on my website. But then my friends asked if I could sell their CD, and then friends of friends started calling asking if I could sell their CD too. So I did it as a favor at first, and then I took all of these artists off of my band's website and put them on their own site. I called it cdbaby.com, and it just took off and became the largest seller of independent music on the web with almost 200,000 musicians and 100 million in sales and stuff like that. So anyway, but that's all, you know, in the past. What makes me a game changer? Mm-hmm. I think I had to think about this before we talked, because I love that you have this subject. And I think for me, it's just that I have a lack of interest in the existing game. Mm. Or maybe it's like a healthy disgust for the existing game. And I think I believe that the rules don't apply to me because I'm playing a different game.
Okay, like, wait a minute. Okay, I love that right there. We don't play the same game. I'm so inspired. Like, that is it. We don't play by the same games, same rules almost. I'm so with you by that. Have you known that your whole life?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I obviously. Yeah. I mean, those of us that are weird know that we're weird or whatever, like from an early age, you know?
Yes.
We know that we're not playing the same game that everybody mm-hmm. else seems to play. I mean, like, here's some of my silly little examples. Just, I've never tried coffee. I don't surf the web. I don't use Mac or Windows. I use an old Unix operating system called OpenBSD that looks like a DOS terminal. Mm-hmm. I prefer to make all my own software. I don't use any web services for email, calendars, or project management, or file storage, or anything else. Mm-hmm. I've never actually listened to a podcast ever in my life. I don't watch videos. Books are my favorite way that I learn everything. I thrive in solitude. I love to live places that have no people around, ideally, you know. Mm-hmm. I love the phone. I talk with my best friends almost every day around the world. I really like to move every year or two. I've never lived anywhere more than 2 years. I don't own a house or a car or much of anything else. I like the concept of enough. I only own two plates and one pair of pants because that's enough. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, one home is not enough for me. Mm-hmm. I technically live in three countries at once right now. I don't work for money. I just do things for intrinsic reasons like curiosity and self-improvement. And I don't really want anything. The only things I want more of are the skills that are up to me to develop. But to me, I don't think these things are weird. I think everyone else is a little weird for the cluttered, distracted lives they lead, full of these insatiable and unsatisfying needs. But then I've made these multiple successful businesses, and I'm kind of famous online, and I'm ridiculously happy. Mm-hmm. So I think if I've changed the game, or if I'm a game changer, it's really just been for myself. It's me changing my game. I'm not trying to change anybody else's.
That, you know... you know when you watch HBO at the beginning of the HBO, they have that sound. That's what just happened in my head.
Yeah, the static first.
Yeah, because that's exactly like my whole life. I've never played by the teachers or the schools or nobody else's rules. My family never. I was always like doing my own thing. And the fact that you've never tried coffee, I'll say that's a little, like, I'm concerned. But hey, that's all good. But this idea of, you know, you read to learn, you tinker, you create, you thrive in solitude, you move every 2 years, like this freedom, this spirit. And I find that a lot of game changers have this same kind of inner sense about them where they kind of roll at the beat of their own drum, so to speak.
Right. And it doesn't always have to be on the freedom side. In fact, just yesterday I read a brilliant article. I think it was in The Guardian, the UK newspaper, mm-hmm. about a guy from India. Mm-hmm. He's like, I think he's living in New York City. Yeah, he's living in New York City, but his dad is from India. And his dad just has no interest in visiting anywhere else in the world. He just kind of has this feeling of like, why would I go to New York City? I don't care about New York City, mm-hmm. or I have no reason to see it. Uh-huh. He said, but the interesting thing is my dad is fascinated, his dad is uh-huh. fascinated with the whole world, and he reads all day long. He's completely up on world events. He knows everything that's going on anywhere.
Right.
And he'll say, like, Dad, can you explain to me the situation in Western Sahara right now?
Uh-huh.
And his dad will get perfectly articulate, completely informed update of everything that's going on in Western Sahara right now, or he will tell you about the economics of the euro versus the US dollar, whatever. So he's actually supremely interested in the outside world, but just has no interest in like going there and looking at the Statue of Liberty or something.
Right.
So in some ways, it's like this idea of knowing what your tastes are, knowing mm-hmm. what makes you happy,
mm-hmm.
and not doing what everybody else is doing because people say this is what you should do.
Yeah.
So I just call that up as an example that it doesn't always have to be this digital nomad, freedom trotter, individualist American thing. It can, you know, it can happen from any different angle.
Where are you living now? What are the three? What are the three countries that you're living in currently?
New Zealand, Singapore, and Belgium. So right now I'm I just moved into a new apartment this mm-hmm. week
in
Wellington, New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Lane and I had to delay our call today because the internet installers showed up when we were supposed to speak. So anyway, I'm sitting here looking at the waves crashing onto some rocks on the ocean right in front of me. And I'm still a legal resident of Singapore, which I love Singapore with all my head. And Belgium, which is kind of new to me. I had to admit that I don't really know much about Europe. And so I became a legal resident of Belgium, and I'm starting to slowly make that my third home.
So fantastic. I love Singapore. It's one of my, yeah, I love Singapore too. It's great. Never been to New Zealand though. It's on the list.
It's almost identical to California. I actually don't recommend coming here to visit that much. And, you know, if you've already been to Japan and India and China and all the other fascinating places in the world, then maybe come to New Zealand. But if you're an American, especially like West Coast American, there's really not that much of a reason to come here because it's about the same.
Okay. But
great place to live. Love it. Great place to raise a kid.
See, that's what I think about. No. Okay. Let me get into our conversation more here. I want to get into, like you said, okay, that's all done and in the past, right? You like built this incredible company. It changed the way music was bought and sold for independent musicians. It changed the way they could make a living. That's a pretty big deal.
And so to put that in a little context, as a professional musician, I was out there trying to use traditional distribution systems to get my music into record stores. Now, this is like mid-90s, right? People still used record stores. Amazon.com was only a bookstore. You know, iTunes, of course, didn't exist. In fact, MP3s didn't exist. So I was out there trying to sell my CD through traditional distribution. But God, the more I learned about it, it was just an awful system. And I met with some distributors, and I even got offered a distribution deal. But the deal was like you would get paid years later, if ever. And if you didn't sell well straight out of the bat, like if your album wasn't a good seller right away, they would pull you out of the stores. If you didn't sell well in the first few months, they'd say, sorry, you had your shot. So we're going to pull you out of the stores now. So just all in all, I felt it was a bad system. So when I created this little website just to sell my CD, and then some of my friends, you know, contacted me to sell their CD, within a few weeks, I realized that I had accidentally started a little business. And I thought, well, I'm not even trying to start a business. I'm really a musician. This is just a silly little hobby I'm doing. So I can afford to be kind of utopian about this. So I just had a night of introspective thought to think like, well, from my musician's point of view, what would be the dream come true distribution deal? And I thought, okay, number one, I want to be paid every week. Number two, I want the full name and info of everybody that buys my music. Yes. Those are my customers. I don't like it when the retailer says, nope, sorry, those are our customers. You're just the supplier. I say, no, screw you. They were using you to get at me. They're my customers.
Right.
So number three, I would never be kicked out for not selling enough. So if I'm doing some kind of obscure heavy metal Tibetan chant tuba music that's only going to sell one copy every year, it should be available for those people that once a year want to buy a copy. And lastly, there should be no paid placement, because I always thought that was unfair to those that can't afford it. So those are my four, that was like my mission statement, my four missions. And that was it. So it turns out that those four things, which went against every system in the existing music business, became a game changer.
Yeah.
And what I love is that eventually it became the new norm.
Yeah.
Right? So like at first, when I first started CD Baby, people that would call me and ask about how this works, they were shocked that they could get paid every week. People are like, what do you pay every week? Like, I'm used to getting paid 2 years later. How are you able to pay every week? I mean, what's the catch? And I say, no, there's no catch. And they think, oh my God, that's amazing. And so Lane, a few years later, like I'd say like 5 years into it, I would get people calling customer service, like thinking about signing up. And they would say things like, well, why do I have to wait a whole week to get paid?
No.
And you know, I could have been offended at that, but I was actually, that moment made me so happy because I realized that this little thing I started actually changed the way people think about music distribution. That like getting paid once a week just became a norm. And now what people wanted more than that. I was like, yes, I did it.
Yeah.
So in fact, the final cherry on top was about 5 or 6 years into it, I got an angry letter from a traditional music distribution guy that had been a distributor for 20 years. He'd been in the music distribution or CD distribution or whatever, album distribution business for 20 years. And he sent me this angry letter that literally, it said, fuck you. He's like, God damn it. He said, I've been doing this for 20 years. And now because of CD Baby, people come in here expecting to be paid every week. I can't do that. He said, now people come in expecting me to just do all of this work for them for $35 because that's what you people charge. He said, and now they're all upset that I can't give them every customer's full contact info from every record store. He said, you know what, man? Fuck you. You really made my life hell. And I'm sick of people like you screwing it up for the rest of us. And I thought that was such a wonderful compliment.
I kind of have to say it is too. I mean, that is really, when you decided to put that button on your site, I would say that was like a moment, right? Like that, I'm going to do this. Were you just kind of sick and tired of not getting paid, not having money? I'm trying to get to that moment of your moment of being like so frustrated, I guess. Like what put you over the edge, or did something put you over the edge to say, I'm going to do it my way?
Yeah, well, it's just, I think we all know this feeling when you look at the existing way that things are done and you just know that it's stupid and unnecessary. You know, like say, I don't know, whether it's like a DMV situation, you're wondering like, well, why do I have to... Why do we need 7 forms? Why am I doing pen on paper into little boxes on a piece of paper if you're just going to type it into the computer? Why don't I just type it into the computer? Why don't you know, like, you just look at inefficiencies like this and you think this is stupid. And so when I contacted, actually, there was a big online website at the time called cdnow.com that was like the biggest seller of music on the web at that time. So I contacted CD Now and I said, hey, I've got this album. I've sold 1,000 copies at shows, and it's actually being played on radio stations all around the U.S. right now. So how can I get it up and selling in CD Now? And he said, well, you can't. We're just a front end to the traditional major label distribution systems. And I thought, well, and I said, like, well, can't I just send you a box of CDs and you sell it and pay me? And he said, well, who's your distributor? I said, I don't have a distributor. He said, well, you need a distributor. I said, okay, how about this? I'm now a distributor, okay? Can I distribute my newest release to you? And he said, no, look, kid, it just doesn't work that way. You've got to go through the traditional channels, the major label distribution. I thought, well, that's stupid. Why can't I just send you a box of CDs and you sell it and pay me? And so because that just seemed like a silly inefficiency, I just thought, oh, screw it. How hard could it be to put a buy now button on my site? You know? But the funny thing is, actually, in 1997, when I started this, it was hard. Like, there was no PayPal.
Right.
There was no Stripe or Gumroad or all these things that exist now. Like the only way you could have a buy now button on your site was to like contact your local Wells Fargo bank and set up a merchant account. And it was like $1,000 in setup fees. And it took 3 months of paperwork. They actually had to send an inspector out to my location to make sure I was a valid business.
Wow.
It required that I incorporate, set up a separate business. They needed me to have insurance against something fraud. I needed an actual physical point of sale terminal. And I did all of this work for 3 months. And I had it, you know, 3 months later, a buy now button on my website. So it was realizing how hard that was. I think my mindset was also this, it was like the co-op mindset where if one of us has some kind of scarce resource, then we should share it with others. And I was living in New York City. I had a lot of musician friends. So I just kind of told my friends, like, you know, I've gone and built this thing for myself. I might as well share it. That's all.
I love
it didn't
that.
Feel like a big deal. It didn't feel like revolution, you know? It just felt like...
It's normal.
An obvious...
Yeah, it's normal, for you.
To be done.
Yeah, I totally get that. I totally get that. And it completely transforms so many lives, and that's the cool thing. And then you got sick and tired of that? You took an exit from it? You were done with it? Just like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, just like that came 10 years later, you know? So it was... 10 years of It was everything I did. It wasn't like it was my 9 to 5. It was like 7 a.m. to midnight, 7 days a week. All I did and lived and slept and breathed was CD Baby for 10 years.
That's
I had no
crazy.
Personal life. I didn't want one. It was just, I was just completely obsessed. It was all I did every waking moment for 10 years. So after 10 years, it really felt, I felt done the way that, like, I don't know, maybe a novelist can tell when they've written the end of their book, or a painter has put the final brushstroke on a giant mural or something, you know, and they just step back and you look at it and you think, well, yeah, I got nothing more to add. That's it. I got really, really lucky. I'm really not a money-driven person, as you can tell, but I got really lucky that I just coincidentally felt done in early 2008. And so I had always had lots of people wanting to buy the company, and I'd always just said no. So it was like this certain week in January 2008, like the stock market was at an all-time high, and I guess other companies were feeling like they had tons of cash, and I got three calls in 1 week from three different companies asking if I wanted to sell CD Baby, and I told them all no, as usual, as I had been saying for 10 years, but then I thought about it a bit, and I thought, actually, you know, if I was ever going to sell, now's probably the time because I'm done. So I said yes. I let the three companies kind of outbid each other and sold it to a company called Disc Makers that I thought would take good care of my clients. I thought they understood my client base well. Actually, I got Amazon offered more money, but I felt that Disc Makers could handle my clients better. So I just wanted to put the company in good hands. And yeah, August 2008, I walked away, and then financial collapse happened a month later, and I felt so thankful.
Right. Oh. So after 2008, I mean, what have you been doing now?
Oh, nothing.
Playing, traveling.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
Yeah.
I think
discovering.
I spent the first year or so like wanting to disappear. I didn't like having all that responsibility. I had 85 employees, and that was just too much for me.
Yeah.
So I spent the first year wanting to just disappear. Like, I was actually looking into, like, how can I legally change my name and drop off the just, like, disappear. Like, I really looked into this deeply, and I felt quite into it. But then there was a moment about, I don't know, 6 months later, where I was reading a book about some historical figures. And I realized that to put yourself out there in the public is often a pain in the ass, you know, to put yourself out for critique, put things into the world that can be attacked, and to, you know, speak your mind publicly. It's actually a lot easier to just hide. But I realized that it's actually in the long run more useful to others if you are out there in public and sharing things with the world. So I decided to man up, to step up, whatever you call it, to take responsibility and be more public again. And that's about the time I decided I wanted to take a new phase and be more of like a TED speaker, writer, thinker kind of person. So I did.
I think I'm just thinking about dropping off the face of the earth. Like, just think about that. It's kind of stressful being out in the public eye. I mean, I've had short stints of that, and then I've known, like, several of my friends have been big, famous people, and it's a nightmare for them. It's just like, oh, I can't even stand that. We were talking about what's his name? Facebook.
Zuckerberg.
Yes, thank you. Drawing a blank. And we were talking, you know, he has a house here in San Francisco, and we were talking about the security measures that he's had to install in his house with a safe room and like the bulletproofing. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, that is a nightmare. And then a colleague of mine said, well, you know, he's one of the wealthiest men on this planet.
So,
and I was like, oh my God, you know, I don't even like to think about these things. And then to have to live like behind that kind of a life, you know, like, ugh, just sounds horrible.
Yeah, it sounds horrible to you and me, but it's funny that it's like everybody chooses it. That's why it's, I was so upset when like Kurt Cobain killed himself because like, I'm too famous. I can't stand it. I'm too famous. Because you know what? if you're ever too famous, you can just get a different haircut, go gain 50 pounds, and get a job at a Burger King somewhere, and nobody will believe that you're that famous person. You know, Kurt Cobain could have moved to Iowa, looked different, applied for a job at Burger King, and he could have told anybody, I'm Kurt Cobain. They would have been like, yeah, like hell you are. Yep. You always have the option of not being famous. It's very easy to not be famous. So anybody who's famous, you can't have too much sympathy. They had to put forth quite a lot of effort to be famous, and you actually have to keep putting forth effort to continue to be famous. So I think it can kind of be a cool thing to moan about it a bit, to not look too eager. But I mean, ultimately, I thought about it that it is more useful to others. Mm-hmm. In fact, do you want to hear my four tips on how to be useful to others?
You know what? I was just going to say, like, isn't being useful the whole name of the game here, right?
Right.
Isn't that why we're here? Isn't that why we're in community? Isn't that why we're on this planet, is to help others? So, yes, bring on your tips.
Sure. Okay, so I think the top four ways to be useful to others are, number one, get famous. Like, do everything in public and for the public. Because the more people you reach, the more useful you are.
Yeah.
The opposite is hiding, which is of no use to anyone. Number two, get rich, because money is really kind of neutral proof that you're adding value to people's lives. So by getting rich, you're being useful as a side effect. And then ideally, once you are rich, then you can spend the money in ways that are more useful to other people. That way, getting rich is double useful. Mm-hmm. Number three, share strong opinions. Because I think strong opinions are very useful to other people.
Okay, I want to stop you for just a minute, because a lot of people, like, I have huge opinions. Like, I'm out there, right? And, like, some people just honestly, they're like, enough. Like, no. But I'm of the variety of, like, if I don't have an opinion, then I'm just going to die. Like, if I'm not heard, or if I'm not sharing, then other people are hiding or not putting out their message.
Right.
Right. Like, I feel like if I'm out there stating my opinion and I'm sharing about the way that I see the world, that gives the doorway for others to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, actually, I got this tip from Brian Eno, the record producer that worked with David Bowie, Talking Heads, and U2 for many years. And I like his music, but I love his philosophies on the creative process. So he said that often his job as a producer is to have strong opinions. Like, he'll be in the studio with a band, and they'll say, like, oh, I don't know, what should we, like, should we do this, should we do that? And he'll say something like, I think we should remove the drums altogether. And they'll say, what, are you crazy? They'll say, no, we need the drums. The drums are essential. We can't do without the drums. It's, you know, the drums are the whole point. And he said, okay, good. Glad I could help you solidify that opinion.
Right.
And he said, or other times, he said, he'll just say a strong opinion and people will say, huh, you know, I was kind of ambivalent about that before, so I think I'll adopt your opinion. So, yeah, I think that when you share strong opinions, people who were previously undecided or ambivalent can just adopt your stance.
Yep.
So now you've been useful to those people.
Yep.
But people who strongly disagree with you can actually solidify their stance by arguing against yours. So now you've been useful to those people. So I think, even if you just invent an opinion for the sole sake of argument, then boldly sharing a strong opinion is useful to everyone. Mm-hmm. Oh, lastly, number four.
Yeah, number four.
Be expensive.
Be expensive.
Because I've read a lot of these books about psychology and stuff like that, and I've found over and over again things like this, that people that were given a placebo pill and told that it was a painkiller, they were twice as likely to have their pain disappear when they were told that this pill is very expensive.
Yeah.
And people who paid more for tickets were much more likely to attend the performance, the tickets they paid, if the tickets were expensive. And people who, just in general, people who spend more for a product or service value it more and get more use out of it. Mm-hmm. So therefore, ergo, if you are expensive in whatever you do, whatever you're putting out into the world, if you make it expensive, you're actually doing the world a favor, because people will get more use out of it.
Yeah. So true. I can't agree with you more. Yeah, people have to pay for things. Like, I totally agree with that idea of paying for that service so that people can show up and get whatever it is that they're going to get out of that experience or learn what they're going to learn or whatever. I totally agree with that.
Tony Robbins, I remember listening to one of his audio things like 20 years ago, and he said that when he was in his late 20s and decided to really take his consulting seriously, and he knew that he was good, he'd kind of tested what he did with hundreds of people, and he knew he was great at it, mm-hmm. he decided to raise his fees to $1 million per consultation.
Oh my God.
And he said,
I love it.
And he said, because I had enough people that were still interested, mm-hmm. and he said, not only would I charge $1 million, but people who would come to me saying they were interested in coaching with me or having me consult, I would actually intentionally shoo them away at first. I'd say, I'm very busy. I can't be bothered. Or sometimes I just wouldn't reply to them. And I'd wait until people had contacted me a few times. And I'd say, okay, you really want this, huh? Okay, well, it's going to be $1 million. And he said, not only that, I'm not available for the next 4 months. Mm-hmm. So how about November? And they'd say, wow, okay, uh-huh. November 12th it is. And he said, they'd show up at my house November 12th. After having sent me $1 million, and I'd say, okay, the reason I put up all these barriers is I refuse to accept anything but total success. If you are not actually going to make this change, then just get out now and I'll refund your money. Like, you better, whatever thing we discussed today, you better make this change or the whole deal's off. So he said, that's why I was charging $1 million and making myself so hard. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to be working with people that didn't make the change, or more specifically, I wanted them to make sure that they have invested so much into making this change happen that they absolutely will follow through and do it. You've paid $1 million. It's like, God damn it, you are going to make this change. You spent $1 million.
Yeah.
Of course you're going to make this change happen. So yeah, in whatever you're doing, I think there's the equivalent of that for your service, your product. Be expensive. It's more useful to others.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you for sharing that. I want to get just we've already come up on the end of our show, but because I want to know a little bit more, do you mind staying on for a minute more?
I'm good.
Okay. Because you're traveling and out there in the world, I want to get practical for a little bit for a moment and find out how you manage your time.
I don't manage my time very well.
Okay.
I manage my time the way that a kid playing with Legos manages his time. Oh, I just tend to just do whatever fascinates me mm-hmm. for as long as it does. And that's it. My friend Tynan wrote a brilliant book called Superhuman by Habit. And it's all of the advantages of creating habits in your life and living your life by habits for the things that are important to you. And I tried that for a while, mm-hmm. but I just tend to... I really love diving into one thing at a time. Like, I'll just, like, I think from, say, just this year, for example, from like December through April, mm-hmm. I was completely obsessed with this programming project I was doing. So it's like, I would wake up at 4:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. just bounce out of bed and start programming at 4:30. And I would do that all the way until midnight when I'd go to sleep for 4 hours and then wake up and do it again. And I just did that for months.
Yeah.
And then around April, I finished.
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned World Domination Summit. That was in July, and by mid-April, I realized I hadn't prepared my talk yet. So mm-hmm. I really spent April, May, and June just full-time, all day long, doing nothing but preparing my talk for that conference.
Wow.
Whatever, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, just doing that. Mm-hmm. So I'll just do that for a while, then I'll pause my programming. And so now I came back from that, and now I'm back in Wellington just as of last week, and so I'm diving into my programming again. So yeah, I don't really have a lot of habits or good time management. I just dive into one thing at a time.
You just do it, head down, get it done.
Yep.
Enjoy it.
Until
I don't. Yeah, I'm good with that. I love that idea too. Do you have any sanity safeguards or anything that you do like on a regular day-to-day basis that keeps your head together? Like,
good question. I think it's a bigger thing. You know, at the beginning of the call, I kind of listed out all of my kind of weird preferences.
Uh-huh.
And those are actually things like that are hard to live by. It's hard to not get sucked into other people's game.
Yep.
Right? Use your word for it. even things like, you know, social expectations, or if a family member is freaking out or something like that, I just have the belief that that's not my problem. Yep. Luckily, my sister does not have that belief. So, you know, if my parents are having a freak out, my sister's the one to step in and get involved. And I'm the one to just say, no, don't, you know, contact me when it's all done. But that's just my game. You know, I'm not saying my way is right or wrong. It's just kind of, I've just noticed that that's him. So I think, you know, keeping my sanity is often tied together with making sure that I'm playing my game, not trying to play someone else's game.
Are you a yoga person or like a walker?
No.
Do you do any kind of physical, like, use your body?
Actually, you know what? Totally goes against previous prejudices of mine. I love when this happens, when you have like a prejudice in life. There's something that you're actually against, whether it's, I don't know, opera music or Indonesian food or something. Like, you think that you hate something, and then something changes your mind, and later you love it. So my whole life, well, I don't know, since I was a teenager, let's say growing up as a teenager in Chicago in the 80s, high school was divided into the jocks versus the freaks, and picked your side. And, you know, I was clearly on the freak's side, you know, with my denim jacket and the heavy metal patches and the long hair, and we'd hang out in the smoking area. Can you believe that back then high schools used to have a smoking area?
Right.
And that was like legit, you know, so I would hang out in the smoking area with the heavy metal kids. So we would scoff at the jocks, and I'd make fun of these guys that would like sit in the gym for, you know, hours a week just lifting pieces of metal. And I was just like, what a stupid thing to do with your life. That's ridiculous. And Lane, I felt that way all the way up until like, oh, 2 years ago. And then 2 years ago, like, a few different people that I respect and admire convinced me that lifting weights was not about vanity. It was not just for people that want to be big. It's actually really good for your bone structure and your general health and your general fitness and all this stuff. And I thought, wow, okay, I guess I'll try it. And I went down to my local gym that was like, actually like kind of more of like a straight up good old fashioned barbell gym with no, you know, no yoga classes, no Nautilus equipment, just lifting good old fashioned barbells. And I learned how to properly do the deadlift and the squat and the bench press and the overhead press and things like that. And I love it. So yeah, I still actually love like biking and walking and stuff like that. But actually a few times a week for about an hour, I do the good old fashioned barbell lifts and overcame a past prejudice and now love it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love it. Good for you. I'm going to close up our conversation, and I love having you. I just love talking to you because you're so my people. And the last question I want to ask is, you know, because I ask this with everyone, but share your guilty pleasure.
I don't feel any guilt.
Come on.
Books. They're really, I guess it's that, you know, I still feel a little weird about the fact that it's like, I've still never heard a podcast, but I just know that, I mean, my life is set up in a way that I don't have downtime. I mean, I don't have a commute. I don't really drive hardly anywhere. So really just from the moment I wake up until I go to sleep, I'm either reading, writing, or talking. I don't have that kind of just sitting and listening to something in the background time. So my books, I mean, the books that I love, I put them all on my website at sivers.org/book.
What are you reading now?
B-O-O-K. What am I reading right now? A book about math. I realized, well, there's a programming language I want to learn called Haskell that's built on using calculus terminology that I've never understood before. I kind of stopped learning math when I was, I don't know, 12 or something. So I'm going back to algebra to brush up, and I'm going to start studying pre-calculus, and I want to study calculus. I'm just kind of filling in that gaps of things I haven't understood. So I just started reading a math book. But yeah, if you go to sivers.org/book, I put everything I'm reading, I take detailed notes on, then I post all of my notes for free. And then I even sorted the books with my top recommendations up top. So,
oh my God, you sound like my husband. That's exactly what my husband does. He'll send me the Evernote of the of the book. It's good. It's good to do that for people. That's a great way to be of service.
Well, yeah, and I did it for myself first. In fact, I used to just do this only for myself, and I would keep them on my phone. Mm-hmm. It was a way for me to remember what I had read in the past and not forget that awesome book I read 8 years ago that, you know, was a big influence in the moment I read it. But then over the years, you know, the lessons fade. So I didn't want them to fade. I wanted to keep it fresh. So I used to take detailed notes just for my own review, so I wouldn't have to reread the whole 300-page book. I could reread my, you know, 15 pages of notes.
It's perfect.
So then, yeah, after a couple of years of doing that, I just decided to share it publicly. So, yeah, check it out. My top recommendations are at the top. And
fantastic.
Lastly, I guess I just want to say, anybody who listens to Lane is my kind of person. So, you know, if you made it all the way to the end of this interview, I probably want to meet you. So email me at derek@sivers.org. And I actually put aside a little time every day to answer every single email, no matter how crazy or what questions I get. So feel free to ask me anything or just introduce yourself.
That's fantastic. Derek, you're just, on my list, my top 10. Thank you for being out in the world and doing things differently and just being a new friend. Thanks for being on the show.
Anytime.
Game changers, make sure that you go over to sivers.org and check out, you know, Derek's books and drop him a line and just say hi. And I just want to say thanks for listening today. I know there are many podcasts that you can listen to, and I hope that we brought you some inspiration and some fun and perhaps some laughter today. Go out and have a great day. Until next time, over and out.
Thank you for listening. Get out there and change your game. Until next time, rock and roll.